SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. We're a little late getting in here, 10 minutes in. And Casey trying to hook up with Chris Engelhardt. And we had a window between 11 and 11:30 to get to him. John White's going to join us next. And while we wait for Chris, one thing I didn't get to mention with Mike about Wet Your Whistle, certainly any opportunity to talk about Bo Lane, we're happy to take. And Wet Your Whistle was bred by Bo Lane out of Winlock's Glory Days. Thinking of New York names. And he's a gelding by Stroll. And keep an eye open for Wet Your Whistle for his 4-year-old debut. And last workout, Fair Hill. So, as Mike said, we'll look forward to that. And David Palmer owns Wet Your Whistle. I think that might have been closing. That was I think closing day at Woodbine. And you know, another topic. Speaking of New York and breeding, had a question on Twitter. We were talking about megahertz, and Trucker Kurt with a great question, saying, you know, is megahertz still alive? And as far as I know, she is still alive, and I believe she's in New York at Peter Kazimias's Kaz Hill Farm, because he bought her for a very reasonable price, $40,000-$50,000, I think, at a and she was in foal to Quality Road at the time, and she had a Quality Road, I think, colt, who Mike Baker is training, and that horse went through the Saratoga New York bred sale, $100,000. And megahertz had another foal that followed that one. But there wasn't one in 2018. So there should be a 2-year-old floating around. And we'll try to confirm that, but she'd be 20 now. Megahertz. As far as we know, she's here in New York somewhere at Kaz Hill. So we'll find out. That's a good question, right? Having touched on the cancellations, yeah, I didn't see, did Laurel cancel yesterday in advance of today? That I missed it. Gulfstream today. And there's a few good spots. Got a feature that features 3-year-old fillies, a mile on the turf. Full field there of 12. 3-1 favorite on the outside. Oh, that Fierce Scarlet of Chad Brown's. There's also a 3-year-old filly turf mile maiden group with quite a few first-timers. That's the race that we brought up with Mark Cassie. That goes as the 7th. Some of the other racing, Laurel, beyond Laurel and New York cancellations, Mahoning Valley today, Turf Paradise, Golden Gate as well. Golden Gate's got a nice first level allowance, mile and a 16th for 4 and ups. Jonathan Wong with the 9-5 favorite in there. Muggeritz, as opposed to megahertz. Muggeritz, the favorite. They got a couple of maiden races and starter allowance. Looks like a decent card there as well. And then Santa Anita. I guess so, Case. If we can't, if we're struggling to get, struggling to get Chris, we can maybe try him tomorrow. We'll have plenty of time. So John, we'll get John White in here to join us. I mentioned obviously the performance of Solid Wager, who was patiently handled by Jose Lascano to win the Toboggan. Then yesterday in New York, Forever Liesel, who's a horse that we've kind of rooted for and followed, the Mineshaft mare for Callenberg Farm. And Michelle Nevin's done a nice job with her. She's had $250,000 in earnings going into yesterday's ladies handicap, and she was very strong and won off, beating Sarah Street and Aaron Yagoda's Crimson Frost and everybody else. So Forever Liesel, 5-year-old, wins the ladies handicap, which has been around a long time, as has the Toboggan. So that was your New York features. And speaking of being around a long time, John White, he joins us now. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. One thing about the weekend, with a lot of the focus on the football, when I was over in Las Vegas on August 1st to cash my Justify Kentucky Derby future ticket at 100-1, there at the Wynn, I decided to take a little bit of those winnings from justifying the Kentucky Derby and take a shot on a Super Bowl team, and I'd like the Rams, so I played the Rams to win the Super Bowl, and they were 7-1 on the board, and when I went to make the bet, John Avello, out of the kindness of his heart, he says, "Oh, you want the Rams?" I said, "Yeah." He says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 9-1, and I said, "Okay." It was like, I'm not going to argue with that. So he gave me the Rams at 9-1, and I feel very, very fortunate because I think those New Orleans folks really got really took the shaft there with that. I mean, that was a horribly missed call, and that's most likely the game right there, and it's going to be the Saints. Now I will give the Rams credit. When the door opened, they capitalized, and we saw what happens if you don't have the best of kickers with the Chicago Bears. Recently in the playoffs, and boy, this Rams kicker, he just drilled these long field goals. And I mean, the Rams deserve credit to go to New Orleans and come back after being down early in the game and win the game. But I feel very, very lucky to have the Rams in the Super Bowl, to have a chance for my future book bet, because I honestly think that, you know, without bad officiating, it would have been the New Orleans Saints in the Super Bowl. That's a shame. I mean, when a call, you know, is in an important game like that, really affects the outcome like that to me. So, and like you say, Steve, people just talk about racing and how, you know, we have the controversies with the stewards and so forth, but you would think that we could have a weekend of two football NFL games and not have much controversy, but there were sure plenty of controversial calls, we'll put it that way. And I really chuckled, you know, you were talking about Megahertz, who was one of my favorites. I mean, she was a huge fan favorite here in Southern California. I mean, people just loved her, and you know, it's not hard to understand why. Here's this little itty-bitty thing. I mean, it looked like you could take her to some little girl's birthday party for pony rides or something, and she would pack this powerful stretch kick coming from way off the pace. And, you know, she didn't put together any kind of a winning streak like Zenyatta, but she didn't have, obviously, the big fan club that Zenyatta had, but she had a pretty good Southern California fan club, and it's nice to remember her with a race named in her honor, and it's nice to remember Bobby Frankel too, quite honestly, because he's a guy that you know, I just loved being around, and he was such a character and such a smart guy. I can't tell you how many times Bobby Frankel would tell me, you know what, I'm trying to get this Rafael Bejarano out here to California, and if he ever gets here, he's going to be the leading writer. And by gosh, that's what would happen. I mean, Frankel was gruff and so forth, but boy, he was on target so often. I mean, he was so sharp, and I just really admired the guy quite a bit, and really got along with him pretty well, and really miss him. I mean, I miss Charlie Whittingham and Laz Barrera a lot, too. Those three are three of the biggies that I really, really miss, but that megahertz, boy, she was something special.
Did you see the video that the link I put up earlier this
morning? No, I have not seen that. But just listening to you describe it is kind of fun.
Well, you're in it. I mean, you're featured.
Oh, you're kidding. I didn't know that.
Oh, wow. You didn't see the picture yet that if you log on Twitter after the show, there's a funny picture of you. I snapped it off of the screen.
That would be unusual.
Well, you'll see why, though. It just so happens, as I tried to capture it, you'll see Alex Solis has got his the sleeve of his jacket over his eyes, and it's kind of funny. You'll see why. It's great, but you look great, and it was after the, I'm going to say, I mean, it's got highlights. This video's got, it's a 12-minute featurette, basically. It's called The Story of Megahertz. There's really no major voiceover. It's just the, you know, the race calls featuring Trevor and Vic Stauffer. And then there are some clips, actually. There's one with the TVG team of Ken Rudolph and Todd Schrupp, and I think Frank Lyons. There's a couple of people that I haven't seen that are unfamiliar to me from TVG, because I never had, wherever I lived, it wasn't until recently that I had access to TVG. I mean, it's just kind of strange that, and I never had cable, I never had a dish. So I was not ever really a regular TVG watcher, but you'll get a real kick out of it. And anybody that's a fan, I went looking. I just wanted to find one good race or two of Megahertz, and I ended up finding this 12-minute feature. It also has got nice interviews with Michael Bello, the owner, as well, from the winery.
You know, it's funny. I've had to kind of learn to be careful in researching things online, and especially YouTube, because, boy, you can go down a rabbit hole very fast in terms of these old races. I mean, one day I was looking up, trying to find some information on somebody, and, boy, the next thing I know, I'm watching Secretariat win this, and Seattle Slough win that, and Spectacular Bid win that, and Ruffian Run here, and this and that. And before you know it, it's like 2 or 3 hours, and you're going,
yeah,
holy cow, where did time go?
I know, exactly. Well, let's dive into some action too, John, and get some thoughts. We'll swing around to the 3-year-olds in a minute, and we'll get your impressions of particularly of Win 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 and War of Will. But let's talk Santa Anita first of all, and obviously the Roy H. performance is a great way for Peter Miller and the Rockingham team to start to get ready for a trip to the Golden Shaheen. I don't know how much there really is to even talk about in here, although I should mention that Gary Barber, his last starter of the day, he had already won 3 stakes. And then he sent out Conquest Tsunami, who gets a third-place finish and adds to his black type resume. But Roy H. couldn't have been more impressive on Saturday in the Palos Verdes.
Well, you put it exactly right. I mean, the consistency of Roy H. since he's been gelded, and Jay Priven, as you noted, made that point, and that's why that's important information. I mean, to know when a horse was gelded. I think it would be very helpful if Equibase would ever go to the extent of, putting that at the mark of a horse's past performances, because like in the case of Roy H., it would be so illuminating to see that here was where he was gelded, this is what he did before it, this is what he has done after it. And it's just, the job Peter Miller has done with him is, you know, outstanding. There's just no question about it. I mean, here's a horse that can go on the road. You know, he wins the Del Mar edition of the Breeders' Cup Sprint with a 111 buyer. Then he goes to Churchill Downs and wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint with, yes, a 111 buyer. You can't be more consistent. He duplicates his buyer right on the nose. He comes out here off a layoff, and some people, well, you know, he's prepping, and it's his first race since the Breeders' Cup, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, 109 buyer under wraps, just kind of business as usual for the guy. So, now, I will say he was so impressive that I thought, I wonder how this stacks up with one of the most impressive, in fact, the most impressive Palos Verdes I've ever seen, and that was back in 1982 when a Washington bred by the name of Chinook Pass won the Palos Verdes, and it was at that time the Palos Verdes was run in late December, the first week of Santa Anita, and so Chinook Pass as a three-year-old won the Palos Verdes by 3.5 lengths with LeFou Pinkei Jr. aboard in 107 and change, and he would go on to get the Eclipse Award the next year as the nation's champion sprinter. He's the only Washington bred that's won an Eclipse Award. But, I mean, that Chinook Pass was just, if you go to Lafitte Pinkei Jr. today and say, who's the best horse you ever rode, he'll say affirmed. But if you say, Lafitte, who's the fastest horse you ever rode, to this day, he will tell you it was Chinook Pass. And that's a big compliment, actually, to Roy H., that he won in such a fashion that he's making me think back to Chinook Pass and that Palos Verdes. So, in fact, I'll tell you something else about that Chinook Pass, Palos Verdes, that's etched in my mind. Jay Hovday, who listens to your show, I know regularly, he would appreciate this because any of us that worked with the great Leon Rasmussen, I revered him so much, and he was such a gentleman and so knowledgeable. And the day that Chinook Pass won the Palos Verdes, in those days, we submitted our Eclipse Award votes before the end of the year. It isn't like now that you had all the way to January 1st, you know, the deadline being December 31st. It was earlier in the month. And so everyone's votes had been in. And I remember Leon coming up to me in the press box at Santa Anita, and he said, John, it's a real shame that I've already had to turn in my ballot, because he says, I'm going to tell you right now, after seeing this today, I would have voted for him for champion sprinter for this year. And if Chinook had been able to somehow get it that year, he would have been a two-time champion sprinter, which puts you, you know, in a very elite group. There aren't that many multiple Eclipse Award winners. So, but I'll always remember Leon coming up. For him to be that impressed with his knowledge and his, you know, ability to judge horses and racing and so forth, that just, I'll never forget that he said that.
Well, I think, who else? I think Jay Privman slipped in a Chinook Pass reference, too, on Saturday.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So he's on.
Well,
he's
if you're
on...
being compared with Chinook, that's very, you know, that's what I say. That's a real compliment to Roy H. That is for sure, because Chinook was, he was incredible. He really, really was. I mean, if you go back and look at his record, he almost won the Long Acres Mile as a three-year-old, and no horse has won the Long Acres Mile as a three-year-old since way back when. So, and he a mile obviously was pushing it for him because he was a great sprinter. But and then the year he was voted the champion sprinter, he did win the Long Acres Mile with Pinkei, and he won it by like six lengths, but came out of it hurt and was retired after that. But he was a huge fan favorite in the Pacific Northwest. And in fact, when they opened Emerald Downs, you know, they would bring him out and parade him and that type of thing. And when the movie Seabiscuit came out, the movie premiered in Seattle, they took Chinook Pass to the theater and had him outside the theater. And he greeted the fans.
What? You got to be kidding.
No.
That's hysterical. That's awesome.
Plus, he turned out to be a very successful dressage horse. in his post racehorse career. So he was quite a story. There's no. How about this? You were saying at the start here that I've been around a long time. I saw Chinook Pass's father, native born, running the Yakima Valley Derby at Yakima Meadows and get beat. And he was a well-bred son, a native dancer. I mean, he had a terrific pedigree, which was, and had raced back east, native born. And that's why they, you know, bought him basically off the pedigree. And he turned out to be one of the top sires in the state of Washington. And Chinook Pass was, he wasn't some goofy bred horse. He was out of a turn two mare. I mean, and the mare, I talked to the owner, Ed Purvis, who was a Seattle policeman. And Ed told me that they went to the Keeneland Falls sale and they got this turn two filly for a pretty modest price. And especially back in like the late 70s, early 80s, at that Keeneland Falls sale, you could do that back then. There was some real, you know, inexpensive horses with good pedigrees that you could pick up. And so they did that. They got that mare and bred her to native born, and the result was one of the fastest sprinters in American history, Chinook Pass.
How about that? I love it. Well, let's in addition to Roy H's success, let's also talk a couple of other performances on Saturday of the maiden variety. And, of course, Baffert had a nice weekend, the maiden male on Saturday, and then the filly yesterday. Desmond, the first-time starter, not sure, you know, what lined up behind him. There was actually a dare that was supposed to be in this spot, and Jerry Hollendorfer scratched a dare. That was the Medaglia d'Oro sibling of Nero and Ocean Knight. But he came out of this. There was Scalper, the other Baffert, who was an $850,000 purchase for Speedway, and doesn't have a lot to show for it yet, but just two starts in. He debuted on opening day. That was in the Big Scott Daddy race, the Horonis Sadler Maiden, that looked pretty darn good. And, or actually, wait a minute, was that, that's not that, was that the Pipey, John, that big, Big Scott Daddy, is that, I can't remember, is that Sadler or is that Pipey?
I can't recall off the top of my head either,
yeah,
quite honestly.
I think that's the Pipey.
It was a very good race from a number of perspectives. He sat close to the pace, and at the top of the stretch, it looked like it was a race, and by the time they got to mid-stretch, it wasn't a race. I mean, he kicked away from that group. Like you say, we don't know really that much what was behind him, and it's not like he earned a knock-your-socks-off buyer like a Justify did when Justify got a triple-digit buyer in his career debut. This was an 80, so that puts it into some perspective. But the one thing I'll say about Desmond, and well, a couple of things, actually. One is, you know, he's a Union Rags, so I think as the races, you know, Union Rags, a Belmont sure. Stakes winner, as the distances stretch out, I think that's going to work well for Desmond. And the other thing is, you know, I was tipped off to Florida Lamar several weeks ago and, in fact, claimed her in my fantasy league. It's not very often anybody in our fantasy league claims horses before they even race. So I claimed her on January 1st. And but so on XBTV, I've been watching her works, and she's worked several times, Florida Lamar, with Desmond. And she's basically toyed with Desmond in all of their works. But the thing that I kept noticing about Desmond as these works got closer to this weekend, Desmond's works were getting better and better. And that's one of the things, is that you don't want to just judge workouts in the workout itself that day. There's a bigger picture there. Not only how the riders are riding their horses and how they gallop out and what is being asked of them in the work and so forth, but the fact that Desmond, you know, about, say, 3 weeks ago was really no match at all for Florida Lamar. But by the time he got here closer to the race, he was holding his own much better against Florida Lamar. So that was one of the reasons I made Desmond a pretty solid favorite on the morning line first time out. They bet him down to 4-5 favoritism, and he came through. But I think this is a really encouraging starting race for him. And then, of course, Florida Lamar came out yesterday herself, and it is one of the most hyped horses we've had. In fact, I'd say she's the most hyped horse we've had on this circuit since Justify. I mean, she opened 1-9 and barely went above 1-9, went off at 1-5. And again, with Florida Lamar, I mean, the buyer, only a 78, but the way she did this, and again, as a daughter of Tisnell, I mean, she's got this long stride to her, and I don't think she's supposed to be like a Chinook Pass speedster. She's supposed to be someone who's going to really excel as she gets around two turns in these longer races. So, and the fact that Baffert has been so high on her, you know, he told Millie Ball she's the real deal in an XBTV interview. He said that Mike Marlowe had her at Los Alamitos and had raved about her. And I'll tell you what, that type of information really perks up my ears, because I've known Mike Marlowe for many, many years. He's a very, very sharp guy. Has, you know, been an assistant to top trainers throughout his career, and has had a training career his own that was pretty good. And so, I mean, whenever he has really raved about somebody, that his track record is really very, very good. So the fact that Marlowe was telling Baffert, "Watch out for this filly when you get her." And then she lived up to that by the fact that Baffert continued, you know, he validated that endorsement from Marlowe. So this is a very exciting filly, no question about it, in terms of just the sky appears to be the limit here with Florida Lamar.
Now, Andy Harrington certainly had raved about her and was suitably impressed. I mean, there's very pronounced endorsement all four of her last works.
I got to tell you, Steve, it was funny. Andy was on a local radio show yesterday morning, and he was asked about her by Mike Willman, and Andy really summed it up pretty quick. He said, "Mike, this is a stakes filly with maidens." That kind of did sum up the race, really, when you think about it. So Andy was, Toby Terrell also came on and was, you know, very glowing about what he had seen. And these are people I respect. I mean, you know, they know. They've been clocking horses here for many, many years. I mean, I go back to American Pharoah. You know, one of the big endorsements to me for American Pharoah before the Kentucky Derby was what Gary Young was saying about American Pharoah. And it wasn't like, you know, we didn't know he was really good, but Gary Young was making statements like, you know, he's very much like Michael Jordan and that type of thing. I mean, and if you're looking for a potential Triple Crown winner, that's the kind of talk you want to be hearing from somebody like a Gary Young, who's been in this game so long and again, has such a good track record of when he says, "Hey, this is a really, really good one." They're like right almost every time.
Well, I guess 3 weeks. The Las Virginis is 3 weeks away.
Well, she won this so easy. You know, if she'd had a kind of a tough race or something, you'd say, "Well, that might." But gee, you know, that was essentially an afternoon workout for her. So that wouldn't keep that kind of in the possibility range to me of the way she won that race. I mean, it wasn't really much more than a workout for her. I mean, so I could see her possibly coming back in that.
Well, 3 weeks, and then what? The Santa Isabel, March 10th, on the Big Cap card, and then of course the Oaks on April 6th. So that you would think that's the progression. Of course, Baffert's got a hatful of fillies yet to deal
chasing
with.
Yesterday,
yesterday,
you know,
yeah, absolutely.
Akin to the aforementioned American Pharoah.
Well, we'll see what is going to happen with all of those recent maiden winners. And I want to mention too, Michael Stinson, who of course, is working with Tom McGreevy and starting to get his share of winners. Shining Through broke through after a couple of starts as a two-year-old on dirt, then moved to the grass and gets the maiden win out of the way on Saturday in the fifth. That was Rosario aboard and the one-mile turf race. Solid effort here and a nice steady progression for Shining Through. He's a Malibu Moon out of an El Prado mare. Three Chimneys bred him, and it was a $200,000 purchase. And we're rooting for Michael Stinson to do well.
And a common denominator there, because it was Rosario also aboard Florida Lamar.
Yeah, Flavian Pratt got Desmond for Baffert and Sheikh Mohammed bin Khalifa Al Maktoum. This is the Sheikh Mohammed bin Khalifa that owns Val d'Ori and owned Mubtahij as well. The yellow jacket with the blue chevron. Can't tell your Sheikh Mohammeds without a program. then finally, there's sons, there's nephews. Every name is the same.
Early in the days of HRTV, they were going to do a feature on Russell Bayes, and this producer came to me and she said, "Look, can you make me out like a family tree on this Bayes family?" And I said, "I'm sorry. I gave up on trying to figure out those guys about 25 years ago. I said, there's just too many bases."
I did that with who do we have? Did we have Kiko or Kevin? I think we had Kevin Attard, and I said, "Listen, while we got you," or maybe it was Sid. I said, Give everybody the primer here on keeping track." And then there's the daughters and the sisters and so forth that are married to other trainers. It's the craziest family tree ever. John, finally, speaking of Flavian Pratt, yesterday, that pants on fire coming down for Richard Baltus. I thought that this is a mare that's going to be have to take seriously now. It feels like this was a step forward for her.
Well, it was certainly an impressive performance, any way you slice it. Now, I will say, her owner said after the race, and I don't disagree, that she's been the victim of some paceless races, and that's the thing that makes someone like a Megahertz or a Zenyatta, their success, so amazing, because when you have this come from well off the pace style, you're at the mercy of the pace. I mean, you just are. And you're at the mercy of potential traffic trouble. But this pants on fire happened to hit a mile and a half race yesterday, and it was just an inscrutable race for me to try to figure out on the line. I mean, I had no idea who was going favored there. I mean, I can tell you there was no way I was even contemplating pants on fire as the favorite. I feel lucky I didn't have her higher than six, quite honestly. And the fact that as a morning line maker, there is no 7-1 and no 9-1, you're in some very shaky territory there, because each one of those you go up a notch, if they get bet down, it looks worse. Because seemingly the difference between a 6-1 morning line that gets bet to 2-1 is kind of not, it's, you know, people notice it, but when it's 8-1 to 2-1, it gets noticed even more. When you get into the double digits and it's 10-1 in the bet down to 2-1, it looks like really a big bet down. And yet, in terms of the percentages that you use on the table, the difference isn't all that much. 6-1 is 14 points, 8-1 is 11 points, and 10-1 is 9 points. So there's only 5 points between 6-1 and 10-1. There's 5 points difference from even money to 6-5, which doesn't seem like there would be that much, but there is. And there's 5 points between 4-5 and even money. So, like I say, I'm glad I didn't make her higher than six, at least. And but boy, she got, like I say, a race to where the Ray Bell filly that had won the red carpet handicap at Del Mar figured to go to the lead probably, and that the Baffert filly, who won the same race, the Astra, a year ago off a layoff in wire-to-wire fashion, was going to probably be a pace factor too, and she was. She was kind of pushing the Bell filly, and they opened up like 8 lengths on the field. So, I mean, if you're a come-from-behinder, that's the scenario you kind of would like to see, a pace like that that's a real, I mean, it wasn't like a ridiculously fast pace, but it was certainly not a slow pace. And it's the slow paces that really blunt the kick of those closers. And so Pants on Fire. And look, Baltus does a terrific job. I mean, this guy, he drives me mad because he gets hammered in the betting sometimes. So I try very hard when I see Baltus, and it makes it hard to balance these races sometimes because I'm trying not to go too high on these Baltus horses, and sometimes they're cold on the board. So I make them 4-1 and takes up a lot of points out of my morning line pie, and then they go off at 10 and don't run a jump, and just because I was trying to protect myself with Baltus. And then in a case like this, I've got them 6, and they bet it down to 2, and she wins by 6. So you just, you know, have to take each race and do the best you can. But that's a very nice grass distaffer for sure. And like you say, it's a race that would seem to bode well for her going forward.
Well, John, got to wrap up. I've got Chris Engelhardt is going to join us next. But good job, 3-for-8 on the Beat the Host scene on Saturday. So
well, it was so frustrating. I had at Gulfstream a couple of decent price horses that were lurking just off the pace, took the lead at the top of the stretch, and gave me, you know, real encouragement that I thought, oh, here we go, and then they were swallowed up in the last 16th. I mean, and you're just going, oh, really? And that would have made such a huge difference. But you know, and Roy H was one of my picks, and people would say, well, why would you pick him? Well, I had him picked because if by chance I was getting shut out, I figured at least Roy H would probably bail me out from getting shut out. So that was my thinking there. So I'd like to have a few chalk horses and throw and, you know, sprinkle in some nice price horses and hope to hit one of them. And this time I just didn't really hit one of those price horses at Gulfstream, but it's a heck of a contest. I've always enjoyed it, and Johnny D deserves tremendous credit because this was his brainchild. And look at how long this Beat the Host contest has been going. It's been going a long time.
Well, John, good job, and we will look forward to next week. Recap the weekend, including Pegasus and more, and we'll start to catch up on the three-year-olds as well. John White, everybody, and Post Time John on Twitter. We're going to stay right here, and just delighted. I've had Chris Engelhardt on before, but the opportunity to congratulate him on his first graded stake win is really special, and Solid Wager is going to be a force to be reckoned with. A West Coast sprinter, Gary Barber, with a huge day, 3 wins that he was involved in between Fairgrounds and Aqueduct and the Toboggan, goes to Solid Wager. Chris, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
How special is it after 4,000 wins to get that graded stake win?
Well, it was very special. My son Jeremiah, of course, he's playing at a different level than I am and doing extremely well. You know, I kid with him once in a while when after he won a Breeders' Cup race, he'd kid with me and say, "How many graded races have you won, Dad?" And, you know, just kidding around, you know. But at least I can say I won a grade three, and I got to give a lot of the credit to his trainer out in California for, you know, sending me the horse in such good shape and everything.
Yeah, and it worked out. You talk about Peter Miller and Gary Barber.
I'm talking about Peter Miller, yes.
Yeah. The timing was perfect because as it happened, I mean, Peter is flush with sprinters, obviously, back in California. So this is this was a clever move.
Well, yeah, as it turns out, like I said, I couldn't understand it when he wanted to send the horse, and with him being a California bred, but that's why I leave decisions like this to the owners of the horse. You know, they know what they're doing, and just glad to be a part of it.
Well, and we'll talk about his future in a minute, but I do want to get in the opportunity, you know, to talk about you and you know, 4,000 wins and Finger Lakes Hall of Fame and, you know, the family, everyone knows what you and your wife have fashioned. I mean, just, you know, really the first family of racing, not just in Farmington, but you know, in New York, and you talk about Jeremiah and, of course, you know, Jeffrey following as well.
Yep.
I mean, it's really special, Chris, and, you know, everybody so respects what you and your wife have accomplished.
Well, thank you.
This horse is going to be, you know, a major addition. It feels like the sprint division on the East Coast is kind of open for a horse like him.
Yeah, for the time being anyway, it seems like it's a little light in New York for the wintertime. Maybe that's what Mr. Barber saw and when he decided to send that horse out. And, you know, I don't know how long he'll be here, but I'll enjoy it while he is here. And, of course, he'll be going back to very good hands with Peter Miller.
Well, you talked and the immediate plan, the Tom Fool in March?
Not sure. He talked about allowance race in February at some point. And then after that, I'm not sure what the plan is.
Well,
I also was going to nominate him to the General George at
Laurel. Sure. Sure, down at Laurel. And, of course, with, you know what, that makes me think about, you know, Jeremiah was on with me on Wednesday. With his barn down there, you've got a toehold, too. I mean, it operationally, it makes sense.
As far as what? I don't understand.
With Maya having horses down in Maryland.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm sure he would help his dad out and help me out with a stall or something for a day or two, right?
I love it. Who called who here? Did Gary reach out and contact you?
Well, I have Adam Wachtel is one of my
longtime
owners, and he's been very loyal to me, and he's brought me several great owners over the years, and I think when Mr. Barber was looking for a trainer, since Mark Cassie left for the winter, Adam threw my name in the ring, and I've got a personal relationship with Mark also, and he also gave me a good recommendation, so that's how I got the horses.
Well, reputation speaks for itself. The 4,000 plus wins, and you know, your career, no signs of letting up either, Chris. That's the, you know, that's another part of it. I mean, you and if you think about so many of the horsemen that came from Finger Lakes, Charlie Baker enjoying success, Jim Ferraro now feels like a permanent fixture on the NYRA circuit. Many good horsemen coming out of central New York, out of Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
I you know, I mentioned earlier this morning too, when Cassie was on and you came up, and you could tell how much affection he has for you, and I had to include Sheila because, right? I mean,
there's a sign in my office back at Finger Lakes. You want to talk to the man in charge or the woman who knows what's going on? So there's some truth to that.
Well, I know that from everything I've heard, she's a formidable foreman on the Shedra.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this was a wonderful circumstance, and I mean, on a race basis, Lascano was really patient with him. Couldn't have ridden him better.
I haven't won a whole lot of stake races in my career, but I think that's like the fourth one that Jose's won for me. I just have good luck with him in stake races.
Well, and he's not that he can't win on horses on the front end, but
right.
he really is good with a horse that, you know, judging what's happening in front and coming from off the pace. I think he's terrific that way.
Yeah.
Well, this is a nice turn of events. The Calbred comes to New York and sweeps to a toboggan win. And you know, Chris, it's such a historic race as well, you know, not just to win a graded stake, but a race like this that's been around 130 years.
Yeah, right.
What kind of a trophy did they give you? I didn't see it.
Well, I wasn't down there. I heard there was a silver plate. I wasn't there at the time, so I'm not exactly sure what it is. I'm sure Mr. Barber will love it.
Well, and one for you for your trophy room, which has got its share. Well, on your way to 4,500 and 5,000 yet, Chris Engelhardt, continued success. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Chris Engelhardt, everybody, who got on the racetrack in 1967. And 50 plus years, he's been winning races. As long as I've been following racing in New York, the Engelhardt name, and then there became more Engelhardt names in the program, and then more, and I guess at some point there'll be even more yet, because guaranteed some of these sons and daughters of the Engelharts. Jeff and Maya. And how many, you know what, now that I'm looking at this, I'm going to pull this up. And I'm just, okay, so Sheila only has saddled less than 100 horses under her name, and hasn't saddled one in over 10 years. But she won 16 in her name. She's the boss around that barn. And Chris Engelhardt, what was the number I put on it on Saturday? It was career start 4,000, or career win 4,281. And he has saddled over 19,000 starters. 4,280, because he won a race afterward as well, I believe. So, pretty cool, the toboggan. And you've heard Rich Migliore talk. Rich felt that when he won the toboggan, that was, he knew he had arrived as a jockey. That was one of the ones he wanted to win. I was very happy for Chris Engelhardt. I appreciate the visit. John White, of course, as well. Mike Trombetta. The return of Johnny D. It's great. And Nick Tamura with the recap from Friday's Game Builder, and Mark Cassie as well. All right. Good luck if you're playing today. We hear, I appreciate somebody called Casey. Mahoning Valley is canceled now, too. So really anything in the whole Northeast corner KO'd. So Santa Anita and Gulfstream. Turf Paradise. It'll keep you busy, right? All right, good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people. 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.